Hi, and welcome to What the Phalange, the podcast where we watch every episode of Friends, discuss it, deconstruct it, and fan over it one episode at a time.
My name is Emily, pronouns she and her.
And my name is Quinn, pronouns zizier or they, them.
This week we're talking about Season 2, Episode 6, the one with the baby on the bus. This episode aired on November 2nd, 1995. It was written by Betsy Bournes and directed by Gail Mancuso.
This is the one, according to IMDb, where Joey and Chandler are left to babysit Ben when Monica takes Ross to the hospital. Meanwhile, Phoebe loses her singing gig at Central Perk to a professional singer.
This is also the one where Phoebe tries to make money at her hobby, but capitalism destroys her soul, and we all wish Joey and Chandler would just make out already.
Do we?
I do, yeah. I really do.
That's pretty funny.
All right, Quinn, so how's it going?
You know, it's chaos in Ontario, I would say, over here. As you kind of know as well, because you're not in Ontario anymore.
Nope. So they closed the provincial borders last weekend. Actually, while we were in the car, or I was in the car, driving to Montreal. So they announced that they were going to close the borders 2 days later. So currently half of my stuff is in Toronto and the other stuff is here. I'm missing a lot of things.
Like, didn't you tell me that you packed, like you were going to stay in Montreal for a week because our parents are now vaccinated and we needed to have Nora looked after for certain things came up. And Didn't you say that you packed two or three outfits?
I did. Because Mark called me up. Our brother called me up and was like, or actually, no, it was Allie. She was like, she was basically just like, okay, but we don't have a lot of space. So pack as light as possible. She was like, maybe one bag max. So I literally just packed one tiny bag for the week. I joked that I didn't even bring toothpaste because I thought it would take up too much space. So that's pretty funny because then when I went to go into the car, Mark was like, oh, we've got so much space today.
Oh my God.
And Allie and I had a bit of a chuckle on that one. Yeah. But I do have to say, so Allie saw Shannon, one of our listeners, this past week. And apparently the first thing that Shannon said to Allie when she found out that we were separated and I was stuck in Montreal was, oh, but they're still going to be able to record the podcast, right? So this Shannon. Episode, Shannon, is dedicated to you. We are still recording the podcast. I brought my mic. Don't worry.
Also, we love you.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, so it's been a little bit of chaos. There's been political chaos over here. The pandemic in Ontario is becoming a full-on crisis. We have outdoor hospitals already made and being filled up, essentially, to deal with people with COVID. So it's anyway, it's bad news over here, folks. I hope it's a lot better wherever you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So stay safe and watch Friends.
Keep wearing a mask and social distancing. And there is going to be an end one day, folks. But today is not that day.
Oh, how it will be nice.
I think it'll be very interesting in future to listen back to some of these episodes where we're telling our stories around being in the middle of a pandemic while recording this.
It's anyway. A time capsule.
I guess so. Yeah.
All right. So this episode, the one with the baby on the bus, what are your feels around this episode, Quinn?
I have a lot of feels. I mean, okay, so also to be fair, my headspace has not been the best this past week. Mm. So I have very heavy feels about a lot of things. And one of the main things I actually want to talk about in this episode is queer folks adopting all over the world, and like the laws and the regulations around that. And yeah, just sort of bring that up because it just anyway, we'll get there when we get there. But I have a lot of feels about that. But overall, this episode, I think that I really enjoy it. I'm going to be looking forward to another thing I want to talk about is like men being scared and having lots of emotions that we see Ross have. I also want to talk about, I'm just like merging this into what I want to talk about.
Fair. Do it.
Clearly. I also want to talk about leaving like babies places accidentally.
So funny. Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to talk about very different things. So this is going to be fun today.
Oh, really? I thought we were going to have total overlap, but
no,
okay.
I'm like actually kind of shocked that you don't want to talk about this one thing, but maybe it's because you live it every single day of your life. But I want to talk about allergies.
Oh, yeah, I guess we can talk about allergies.
I want to talk about basically turning your art slash hobby into profit yes, and kind of like hustler culture and stuff like that.
Emily, don't hustle a line. Sorry.
What?
Oh, you don't get those sort of memes popping up where it's like those spiritual, like there's like the hustle mentality, and then there's like this like counter spiritual culture that's like don't hustle, align, like align yourself with the universe.
Oh, that's rough. That's like don't hustle, manifest sort of thing. Kinda,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah, that I wish I could manifest the end of capitalism, but you know, one day. working real hard on it. I also want to talk about there's no real big problematic shit that comes up in this episode, to be honest. Like, I think this is going to be one of those episodes where it's like a lot more fun as opposed to last episode where we're like, oh my god, the world sucks, Friends is a terrible show. Whereas this episode, I think there's a lot of good script writing and like overall a lot of amazing lines. I want to talk because of the fact that we hear Smelly Cat for the first time in this episode. And I also just want to talk about, like, I guess, like, their relationships in this episode. Because we see, like, some pretty good friendship things happening. Like, sibling relationships
and friendships. Yeah.
And I just want to talk about, like, friend love and sibling love. And, yeah, I think there's, like, a lot of supporting and, like, some good stuff going on in this episode. And I'm into it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm very excited. Okay. Because there's more positive things happening in this episode, I feel. Anyway.
Yeah.
Let's definitely get into it.
Yeah. So, okay. So, cold open. We're in Monica and Rachel's apartment. Little baby Ben is there, and Ben is crying, and it's so sad. And he's being a little Mr. Cranky Pants. And yeah, and so Monica is kind of annoyed, or like we're hurt, I would say, that Ben seems to cry every time he's in her arms.
I know.
It's so sad.
I would be okay as someone who like has a little niblet, and like both of us having a little niblet in our lives, like I totally get why Monica feels that way. You know what I mean? Like you just really want to have a positive relationship with this like itty bitty little cool amazing human that's like new in your life, that's gonna be in your life forever. You know, you want to be able to bond all the time.
Yeah,
it's not actually a reasonable desire, but
and it's so funny. So ever since Mark and Allie and Nora have been here, I don't know what happened, but on day one Nora was like really not into Mom. I think like was like a little taken back by her and like was kind of like a little bit, you know, just like guarded around her. And then day two, somehow, I don't know what happened, like a light switch went off in Nora's brain. She's now obsessed with Mom, like literally to a ridiculous degree. And here I am just, you know, like I'll be like, Nora, can I have a hug? And she shakes her head and then she runs and she goes, Nana. And she runs to to Mom and only wants to hug Mom. And it makes me sad. And I'm like, Nora, you love me. Why are you running away from me? And so that's I so very funny. Much related to this content happening in this episode.
Why, child, are you choosing someone else?
And it's just, it's so much more mean when the kids are like 1.5 years old and they're literally like shaking your head like, no, I don't want you.
Yeah, like when Nora says no, it's like, yeah, no.
It's so sad. But yeah, no. And then, yeah, in this scene, Chandler is just like going off and doing classic dick move Chandler.
It's so funny, though.
It's so funny. Do you know how long it's going to be before you actually have to deal with this problem?
Oh, you're talking about that point. I thought you meant him just, like, picking up and wanting to check. Like, oh, if I bring Ben close to you and then further away and he stops. Like, yeah. That's pretty funny.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, and then we have the you know, fat-phobic joke that is there.
Yeah.
Which... I've actually been learning a lot more about the fat liberation movement, and I mean, I'm not quite ready yet, but I feel like we have plenty of fat phobic jokes moving forward for me to prep myself to share with everyone a little bit more what I'm learning. So that's to come.
Awesome. Yeah, next episode we're in for a treat.
Yay.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so we cut to credits, and then we're still back in the same kind of, I guess, scene when we come back, except now Monica is serving key lime pie, but it's kiwi lime pie.
Yeah, which, first of all, Emily, you're allergic to kiwi,
I am allergic to kiwi. Yeah, Ross and I are twinsies when it comes to our allergies.
Twinsies.
Except then Monica goes on to name the other allergies that Ross has, and she's like, no, you're allergic to lobsters and peanuts. And I'm like, what? Like, Ross is allergic to lobster and peanuts?
It never comes up ever again. And I'm like, this is the most unrealistic like portrayal of allergies. When you're allergic to peanuts and shellfish, it dictates your life.
Like, you're like looking at every label, like,
yeah, you can't just go to any restaurant willy-nilly. They never show Ross asking, like, do you have peanuts in your kitchen? Can we sit far away from the kitchen because you cook shellfish back there and sometimes it gets vaporized and could possibly give me an itchy throat if I'm sitting too close to it? Like, come on, guys, you know nothing about allergies. This is so unrealistic.
So when I said I wanted to talk about allergies, really what I wanted to do was just like give you a trigger so you could rant about allergies. Our family has so many allergies, but weirdly enough, yeah. I don't have any. But combined, I have a dairy intolerance. Yeah, but
yeah, but some like sort of dairy thing.
Honestly, it's just so funny. Like, if you combine our extended family into one household, like, we have all of the main allergens and most people are vegetarian. So really, we're eating, like, big salads as long as the salad dressing doesn't have palm oil.
Well, I mean, like, when you look at our, like, immediate family, it gets, like... You know, we can manage it okay, you know, but then when you start adding in like Allie's family, like remember when you had to meal plan for your wedding?
Oh, yeah.
Like
that was fun.
That was like a really difficult thing you had
to do. Remember what we made for my wedding? Oh, no, wait. No, that wasn't my wedding. That was Mark and Allie's engagement party. Remember we made those deep fried onion rings with guacamole inside? Yeah. Those were so good. Okay,
that was
now we're getting
so
off topic.
Yeah, we are. Okay. Anyway.
Okay, so this is another thing that's like, I want to talk about like the allergy line, the allergy things that happen in this episode, because maybe I'm just not very familiar with allergies, but like, is it a realistic reaction that like Ross's mouth would immediately swell up and yet he wouldn't have any restriction to his breathing? Is that a thing? I don't know.
Well, so yeah, it's not like a fully realistic portrayal of like the thing is that like if you can possibly go into anaphylaxis, like any sign of anything, especially happening close to the airways, you would go to the hospital immediately. But it's not always so straightforward and simple, you know? Mm. The like, so, yeah.
So they don't have time to play a game of Scrabble?
Scrabble. yeah, no, they definitely don't. Well, I mean, like, maybe they would, but it's not something that you want to gamble with, essentially. Especially when, like technically, he should have an EpiPen, and they should have administered it to him.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, is it, like, is this a case where you can take a couple of Benadryls and call it, like, and take a nap and you're fine? Or is this, like, he should have actually had an EpiPen at home, and then you do the EpiPen and then go to the hospital? But anyways, evolving allergy that he has.
Yeah, normally when you when it has anything to do with like airway possibility of issue, like like swelling in the mouth, that swelling can go down to the throat as well, which can cut off airway. So yeah, you definitely want to administer EpiPen if you have it and go to the hospital as quickly as possible, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then he decides to go to the hospital after, like, very much panicking and not wanting to leave his child with his two very, very incompetent
I don't think friends. That's what he was panicking about. He was panicking about not wanting to get the shot.
Well, both, because then he goes like, haha, no, like, I'm not leaving my kid with you two.
Yeah, that's true.
But then Joey says, like, and this answers the question that we brought up a couple episodes ago, which was, does Joey know how to take care of babies because he has so many sisters? But in this case, he says that he does because he has so many Christian sisters, Catholic sisters. And it's like, does he have a lot of kids in his family? Because I feel like we've never heard about Joey's nieces and nephews.
Or no, like in future episodes, like they're all single and or like they're, you know, they're not having kids. So
oh my God, I can't wait till the episode until we meet Joey's sisters. It's going to be great.
I know.
Excellent. Okay, episode.
But a thay.
Yeah, and then he says, like, the final line he says before he leaves doesn't make any sense. And then Joey
But I love
like,
how it's just, like, you can't understand him, but Ross is scolding them. You know, like, it's just, like, it's so perfect.
It's so good. But then Joey is like, yeah, I understood that because – my uncle has a really big tongue. And then Chandler says, is he the one with the beautiful wife? And Joey says, yes. And that is a very funny joke. But it's also so funny because when I first heard that joke, there was no way in hell I would have understood what was being implied in that joke. And it's like a kind of a subtle joke if you don't – if you're not an adult. So
I know. Yeah.
It's like, it's kind of like a like it's one of those jokes that could be like inserted into a Disney movie and the kid wouldn't know.
That'd be a little risky, but yes, no, I totally, totally. Yeah. I probably didn't get it either, even though I was probably older than you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. But then we're at Central Perk.
Yes.
And you know, Rachel and Phoebe are hanging on the couch. Phoebe's showing Rachel a new song. Lather, rinse, repeat. Lather, rinse, repeat.
As needed.
As needed.
So hilarious.
Oh, I wonder, like, if there is a CD with all of her songs somewhere. Because I've never even looked that up on Spotify. Anyway.
I would love to listen to, like, I want to hear the full-length songs that she has. Like, she has some great songs in this episode. Like, Terry is a jerk. He won't let me work. And I hate Central Perk. And I'm just like, that's an excellent song.
Yeah, because Terry is a jerk.
Yeah, he's and also, like, a really weird character. Like,
I think this is the only time that we actually meet him personally.
Is he? Oh, well, I guess we'll see. But
because after this, Gunther is the one that...
Is Quinn going to spoil the show again?
I am not spoiling the show. Anyway, never mind. Apparently this is like a huge like spoiler, which, you know what? Let's take a vote on this. Oh, which reminds me, okay, we need to be making up poll questions because this week... Quinn's headspace was not super great, so I didn't get polls out on Tuesday. Sorry, everyone. However, I decided that I wanted to try something new, that we would ask questions here, and then if you and I disagree on something, we'd settle it by putting a poll out on the day that we release the podcast.
Wow. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So
first question, did Quinn spoil... okay, perfect. Writing that down.
All right. Sure.
But...
Yeah. Okay. So Terry tells Rachel that Rachel needs to basically quote unquote fire Phoebe, I guess, which none of this makes sense really. Like my first question is, how did he ever let her play at all? Like,
yes.
In the sense that like, I always thought that like she played on like maybe an open mic night or something, you know, I never actually thought that like she had a gig playing at Central Perk. Like, how did he ever let her play? Like, it just feels like one of those scenarios in which Phoebe, like, saw a mic on stage and just, like, sat down and started to play. Like, I feel like Phoebe would have done that.
Yeah. Or it was, like, some sort of, like, open mic situation that no one ever ended up showing up for. You know what I mean? And it was just Phoebe.
That sounds great. But I wish I was at that open mic.
Also, what I wrote in my notes was Terry is mean. But also, Phoebe is not very good. So, like, I kind of get it. But what's, like, completely unacceptable is him making Rachel do his job for him. Like, that's not in her job description. She's not, like, the cafe manager. She's not, like, she's just, like, why is it her, like, why is he giving it to her to, do, like, be a bearer of bad news? Anyway.
Yeah.
Anywho.
But it also, it just makes no sense because, like, maybe she has to be the bearer of bad news because she was never actually supposed to be playing in the first place. And so Terry's like, you have to tell your friend to stop playing because she was never invited to do so in the first place.
Oh, I don't know. I still don't think that's, like, Terry should be the one doing it. It's his cafe. He owns it.
Yeah.
What a jerk.
What a jerk. Okay. Terry is a jerk, and he won't let Phoebe work. So now Joey and Chandler are in charge of Ben, and they decide that the best way to take care of a child is to bring absolutely everything they could possibly carry.
Oh my God.
Aim him at a pack of babes.
But, okay, they also, not only do they have, like, this giant-sized bear, but they also have, like, the thing that you, like, that is, like, this little, like, tented thing that has stuff that hangs off of it that you, like, lie baby on the ground and then put it above them so they can, like, tussle at the hanging things above them. Like that never leaves the home. You don't take that places.
Yeah, they didn't have a plan. They didn't have a very good plan at all.
Like, for Joey taking care of seven Catholic sisters, like, it was very unreasonable. Like,
yeah. And it's also, okay, yeah. It's also like, is this a thing? Is this a thing that, like, carrying a baby helps you pick up women? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. I don't know if it's like usually if you see, like for me, when I see a parent with a child, I'm like, oh, that parent is probably very unavailable because they have to take care of a child so much. Like, to me, it's a sign that someone is unavailable.
I think that, yeah, I think.
Not like unavailable, like in terms of singleness or like married, but like unavailable as in like literally does not have time.
You have a newborn child. Exactly. You have no time for a relationship right now. But yeah, but also I think that it's sort of like the same way that dogs have an effect and not like an effect on like a sexual effect, but like on like at least it opens a door to conversation because it's like, you know, it's like a coffee table piece, whatever they call it. Like where it's like a conversation piece, you know, like where it's like, you know, it's a way that, like, people can easily open up conversation and bond over something. And I think it makes you, like, more approachable. And then also, like, if you have a baby, then, I mean, like, there's definitely a very sexist aspect that is happening in this joke.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Where it's, like, essentially saying that all women want babies. Mm-hmm. And so if we have a baby, then we will, like, you know, fire up these hormones and they'll go goo goo for us because they want a baby around us and then like project that onto us and want us to be like the fathers of their babies, which.
And then it also does the opposite, which it's like if you ever, you know, you would never see this joke in which like a woman is carrying a baby in an effort to pick up men. Like if anything, like that would be the opposite, right? In a movie, like most movies, when like a woman is a single mom, like it's this big joke that she's not going to have a date again until she's 18, you know, until her kid is 18, you know? So
yeah,
it's like, yeah, it's that good old fashioned patriarchy shining through in this whole, yeah. This whole like plot line of Joey picking up women or Joey and Chandler picking up women with the baby. But then we get an excellent moment. And it is a moment in which the woman that he approaches believes that Joey and Chandler are dating. And I do think that this is interesting because like it's a bit of the opposite of heteronormativity. Like, I feel as though normally if you would see two people carrying a baby down the street, like, you're, because of heteronormativity, your assumption wouldn't be that they are together. Maybe now in 2021, but back in, like, 1995, I feel like the main assumption would not be that they're together, but rather, yeah, they are taking care of a child, you know?
I don't even know if you could consider them, like, capable of taking care of the child with all the crap they have with them. I know,
it's like they stole the child and all its things.
Anyway, but no, I like what you're saying. I just keep picturing Joey covered in anyway.
Right.
Yeah, totally. And it's actually kind of nice that in that like, if it wasn't followed up by their, like, freaking out about it, like, how mm-hmm. she's just, like, you know, like, my brother and his husband are, like, trying to figure this out, you know, as well. Or probably not husband. She probably says boyfriend, because I don't think that gay marriage was legal in New York at that point.
No, I think we looked this up already. Yeah.
Which leads me to the conversation about queer couples adopting, which... If you are queer, I don't particularly recommend looking it up because it's all very, very sad. Like the Wikipedia page basically like goes through like arguments against, arguments for, and I'm just like, why is this a thing? Anyway, but just so you know, at this time, it was actually not legal for a queer couple in the United States to have to adopt together. And in fact, Emily, when do you think that in the U.S., across all states, it was illegal to have the rights to, like, adopt a baby and have the legal rights of, like, guardianship as a couple for this baby?
Across all states? Probably mm-hmm. it's still not available across all states.
Well, you're close. It was 2017. Oh, wow. Can you make a guess for Canada?
2018.
No, not so bad. But it just – so essentially in Canada, it's by province. The first province to legalize it was in 1996. Oh. And the last one was Nunavut in 2011.
Who did it in 1996? I'm curious.
Who – like BC.
BC, okay.
Yeah, sorry. I thought I said that. But I also want to kind of point out that, like, okay, so in 2007, so this is more than a decade after this episode aired, 12 years after, there's a case of the adoption proceedings of Emma Rose, which is essentially a court ordered a... woman to give back the give back Emma, the child, back to the biological mother because she was a lesbian. And essentially it became like this big case because then the biological mother refused to like retake custody and was like advocated saying that this person is still like a very viable person to adopt this child, and I do not want to take back custody of the child. And anyway, it was overturned eventually, but Whoa. This is in 2007. So, like,
way too recent.
Like, yeah. And so just like thinking of the fact that, like, you know, adopting a child, like the fact that it could, like, your family could be torn apart because of the law that for some reason is discriminating against a family unit, which also just like doesn't make any sense because there's lots of like alternative families that exist, you know, if it was anyway. It's just
100% like queer phobia and like, yeah, it's just all the ways in which people think that like queerness is like perverted and can harm children in, you know, a thousand ways, like the ways in which like you know, nannies, when like people find out that a nanny they've hired is queer, like it's a lot harder for them to actually get work when you find out a nanny is queer or trans, you know. It's like, so there's a lot of ways in which people or think like queer people are, you know, influencing children to be like, or like also queer. Yeah. I don't know.
Or like a friend of mine who was a stripper and a nanny, and basically like the family found out that she also stripped and lost her job as a nanny. So yeah, it's terrible. But I guess the reason why I wanted to like drive this home is just how, like, without this information, this background information, this episode can really kind of almost like mislead people to think that adoption for queer couples was like a thing in 1995 at this point, right? And like is like a casual thing, you know, well, just like people watching it in 1995, like, you know, it's like, oh, this queer couple is like, you know, looking into adoption. Like, it doesn't actually, you know, like,
it wasn't actually possible. But my question is so it says like my brother and his boyfriend have been trying to adopt for 3 years. But like, maybe she's referring to like her brother has been trying to adopt. Like, can you adopt a child as a single person?
I think so. I think how it possibly was done at this point is because like people are not like in relationship, like in marriage dynamics, right? Like there's no like legal, what's it called? Whatever. When you're in there's a no legal partnership. Right. Yeah. So I think what kind of ends up happening is that like you have a child being adopted, but then under one parent, but then the other parent has no legal rights. And so, you know, you could think of like, you know, a possible scenario where, you know, people split up, like, cause divorce is very common, but then also in other situations where it's like, what happens if the legal guardian passes away? Or what if that person, like something happens to that person, like there's no stability for the other partner to actually have legal rights to keep and hold on to this child and, you know, keep them as a family.
Right, which we learned a lot. Like we did a lot of research about when we were talking about when Susan's rights over Ben, basically.
And yeah, exactly.
What rights does she actually have as a secondary parent or whatever the term is, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's like, and that starts getting really scary. And, you know, and at the end of the day, if we're actually trying to advocate for like the healthiest situation for a child, it would be wanting to actually be allowed to have that stable family unit. But, you know, this dynamic is just not allowing for that anyway.
Boo. All right. Okay. Well, yeah. So then going on to the next scene, if that works for you.
Yeah, so we're at Central Perk.
So we're back in Central Perk, and Rachel basically tells Phoebe that Terry is a big jerk, and that's why everyone's always calling him a jerk, and that they're hiring someone, and her name is Stephanie Schiffer, who we'll get into in a second. But so then Phoebe's like, well, like, I can't believe they would take this gig away from me. My name is in chalk. You can't just erase chalk. Except you can erase chalk.
You're giving like a play-by-play of this scene.
There's some great lines in this scene.
It's so good. But I think what I love here is that like Rachel just becomes like such a great fierce friend, you know?
Yeah,
like,
and this made me think of what you've said in the past about this. Yeah.
Yeah, where she's just like, I'm like, let's also put a bigger context here, right? Like, Rachel's still like new to living in New York, is entirely dependent on this job and would be screwed without it. And technically, Terry has like all the ability and like clearly doesn't care that much about anyone and would probably very easily just fire her if he wanted to or if he felt like it. Mm-hmm. And so it's like pretty gutsy that she's like, no, I'm going to stand up to like for my friend to this person.
Yeah.
So like, you know, she's just like fearless and like,
yeah, just, and this goes back to what we were talking about in like past podcast episodes. We were like, Rachel is a pushover, but she's not a pushover when it comes to her own, like her own friends. Like she like wants to have people's backs as much as possible. Mm-hmm. But she's like, yeah, you could tell that she's like kind of like striking up the nerve to go and do it. And then she like steps up and kind of yells at Terry, not yells, but like strongly speaks to him. And then I put in my notes, I put Terry is such a drama queen because like, I do think like he just like, he's like, fine, fine, fine. And like in the scene before he was like, she's so bad. She makes me want to like stick my finger into my eye. And you're like, okay, Terry, calm down. Like,
it's so true.
Like, chill, bro. Yeah. So I think, I just thought it was really funny how he's like so stressed about this. But yeah, and then Rachel comes back and she's like, who's working for you? And she basically like got Phoebe to be able to stick around and keep doing her open mic stuff. But then Phoebe assumes that that means that she's going to get paid for it. And then she gets upset and she says she doesn't want to play at all if she's not getting paid for it. And she goes outside and starts to play just for her, because she doesn't need charity. When I play for me, I don't need your charity. It's my rendition.
So many good songs. Yeah, yeah, and it was pretty good. Yeah, which then that like, are we gonna lead into a conversation about, like, here I feel like we need to insert a conversation about, you know, like paying musicians, although it's hard to take this fully seriously because like on the one hand in general, yes, pay musicians being like, I'm going to pay you with exposure. Go pay your rent with that is like not legitimate. But also it's really hard to insert that conversation here, even though it's an extremely necessary and valid one, because like, it's just really hard to take Phoebe seriously when it,
yeah, I think like people who are actually struggling artists trying to make ends meet through their music would be very, very insulted if we compared their the fact that they should get paid for the work that they do to Phoebe's music.
Like, I also, to like drive this home even further, I want to put out the little factoid about Lisa Kudrow, that like apparently after the 10 seasons were over, Lisa Kudrow has never touched a guitar again, and she hated every single second of it. Essentially, yeah. they were like, we want you to play the guitar. Like, they had tried to find like other instruments, but they basically like made her play the guitar, and she hated it, and she was like, didn't want to learn it in any capacity, which ended up working out fine for the character.
But yeah, because like, she was originally supposed to be like fine at playing guitar, right? Like, I thought the idea was like she was actually not like great at it, but not terrible, like actually terrible at it. But she just like learned like 5 chords and like that was all she learned how to play and that was it.
And so like, just to like drive home that like she is bad. And like the people behind the songs were not actually Lisa Kudrow, right? They were like a bunch of talented actor or talented writers, right, that like created like some pretty great like little lyrics, tunes and stuff like that, but her actual delivery of it is like supposed to be bad.
That's great. I love yeah, okay, so then I do want to talk about like Phoebe basically working and doing her job for money, but I want to get to that a little bit later in the episode when she's
sounds good
counting the money she made. But yeah, okay, so we're in the hospital now.
And Ross is freaking out.
He's freaking out. And he wants a squirt gun in his mouth instead of
squirt gun. So, okay, I want to have a conversation with you here about this.
Yes.
So when, in a lot of ways, when I watch this episode, what can come to mind is the fact that, like, in general, Ross is a little bit of a man baby. Mm. And, or a man child or whatever. But I also want to flip this over and kind of be like, also recognize that, like, he's allowed to be scared and freaking out about this. You know what I mean? Like that's also, like, we have, I think that, like, in general, our society has a hard time seeing men have fear and, you know, like, and be dictated by that fear.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Like, this idea of, like, man up, men don't cry sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, I think it's interesting because the scene is sort of created that it's supposed to be funny that he's freaking out, which, I mean, I think in general, if anyone's freaking out this like month. That,
yeah,
it is kind of funny. but at the same time, like, yeah, like the humor here is almost sort of that he's a man and he's freaking out.
I get what you're saying. I think that I don't know if they would write this if it was like Monica having this freak out. You know, I think the fact that like the lines and the script are funny regardless of who would deliver them, but I think it's specifically funny because of the fact that it is like Ross delivering the lines. Like, to be fair, Ross is just like a hilarious actor when it comes to like his facial expressions and just like the way he delivers lines. Like, I would argue that Ross is like the person who I find is like the worst friend, but also the best character in the show. Like, he's just really, he just nails his role so well in this show. And so, like, I think that I don't know if they would have written this if it wasn't for Ross. But I do think that, like, what they're trying to parallel is the fact that, like, he's a father and he has, like, this little child and he's trying to, like, make sure that his child is taken care of and, like, he's being, like, an adult who takes care of his child and is stressing that Chandler and, you know, Joey won't be able to take care of his child. And then here he is sitting in the hospital basically being a big child himself, you know? I think, like, that to me is what's funny about it. Is like,
my brother, the PhD, would like to know.
Exactly. And then, like, the way he needs to be comforted by Monica, I think, is really, really cute here. Like, you know, he's like, and she's like, do you want to hold my hand? And, like, the way he does, like, this neck head roll thing where he's like, yes. Like, it's just, like, very kid-like, I think. And I love that. Like, I think they are trying to show that he's being a little kid about it.
Yeah. I think this scene made me reflect on is that, in general, I think that Ross is one of the characters that has the most emotions in the show.
For sure, for sure.
And I find that interesting.
And because, he talks about them the most, too, I think.
Yeah, he talks about them. They transpire through his being, like, so much more. Like they transition, like, transpire into, like, how he acts and does things, you know? Mm-hmm. And, like, his emotions are very surface, you know?
Yeah.
And he has lots of emotions of a lot, like, over lots of different things and has a lot of insecurity. And I think that, I don't know, I almost, like, want to, like, I don't know, I feel like moving forward, like, try to tease apart more the, like, you know, the like, the side of, like, taking issue to the fact that a man has a lot of emotions and is open about them. And then on the other side of, you know, how those emotions affect other people and him being a shitty dude, you know, like, and
yeah, there's definitely like a fine line. And I think like that line is manipulation. Like, I think it's one, like, I think it's, like, I definitely think that like having a bunch of emotions is really, really important. And like, I don't think men express enough emotions in general on television shows, well, and in life. But, like, I do think that, like, the fact that, like, he often uses the way he feels about a situation to manipulate it to fit what he wants, I think, like, that is the issue for me in Ross's character, you know?
Yeah. And when I – yeah. It's interesting because for some reason this quote is coming back to me. Anyone who listens to or knows of Brené Brown, she is a psychologist and shame researcher and has written many, many books and has two podcasts that are like incredible. I really, and a TED Talk that's like one of the top five most watched videos on YouTube. Anyway, I highly recommend her. She's very interesting in what she has to say. And the first book that she wrote, she tells like this story how after many years of research, she sort of saw how shame affects like women in a very specific way, and how shame is kind of used to control women in a very specific way. And in going on like tour to sign books, she ended up like having a conversation with the husband of someone that she signed a book for, and he kind of like jabbed at her and was like, the line that he said was like, you know, you wrote this book about like shame for women, but but my wife and children would die before they saw me fall off my white horse, was I think the line. And essentially I thought that was, I don't know, it was very interesting for me to hear that, and then also how Brené Brown sort of felt similarly, and how from like moving forward she started like doing more like kind of looking at how shame affects both genders and like, but they're or both, lol, two of the binary genders that we, validate in our mainstream society. Kind of like essentially looking at essentially how that affects people in different ways and how shame, like essentially, you know, I think she says it without directly saying it, but or she probably actually has said it directly, just like the concept of toxic masculinity and how shame is a very specific thing within it. Anyway. It was a tangent, but go check out Brené Brown.
A Brené Brown tangent is always accepted.
Ross needs a little Brené Brown in his life. That's what I think.
That's so funny. Okay, well, speaking, oh my God, I love transitions. Big fan of transitions. But speaking of toxic masculinity,
okay,
the next scene we go to is Chandler turning to Joey and said, like, oh, great job, Joey. Why don't we just go to the park and make out? And I say, yes.
Do it. Oh, I see. That's what your comment was about before. I didn't catch that.
Yeah.
It's clever, Emily.
That Chandler says. And I'm like, yeah, Chandler, do it. I think that you kind of want to a little bit, and I think you should. I'm shipping them. That's what I'm doing this episode.
You're shipping them?
Shipping. Isn't that like, that's like a thing that people say when they watch, you ship two characters, like you, like relationship, like you want them to be together. So you ship the two characters.
I didn't know that. I'm going to use that more
urban,
often.
Urban Dictionary, that shit.
Okay, I will. So you've shipped them and, but they're still on search for women.
Yeah. And then
pull into their baby vortex and arouse their hormones. Yes.
And Chandler, I mean, Joey says this line and I literally like, I don't know if this is a 90s thing because I literally have never heard this anywhere else. And I had to go back, listen to it twice and then put on captions to make sure I was hearing it properly. But he says when he sees those two women getting onto the bus, he says, oh, like, look at that talent in reference to the two women. And I'm like, what is that? Like, are they talented at being human beings getting onto a bus? Like, what is he?
Look at you take those stairs without stumbling at all. How I loathe you.
Like, is the idea, like, is that a phrase? Like, I've never heard of that. Like, look at that talent. Like, is that?
I've never heard of that expression either.
That's, yeah. So maybe that's a poll question. Have you ever heard the sentence, look at that talent before in your everyday life outside of friends? And if you could explain it without looking up what it means, please tell us what it means, because that sounds like I want to have a lot of answers to that question in as many foolish forms as they come.
Also, like, have you used it before?
Look at that talent. Yeah. Anyways. Okay. Yeah. So then they get onto this bus to follow these women. The women are like super into them. And then Joey has to like very much clarify that they are two heterosexual guys having a heterosexual hangout on this straight afternoon on the straight bus with all the straight people, and only straight things exist and no gays allowed.
Oh my God.
At least Chandler kind of like pushes him a little bit. He's like, are you done?
Like, I know, right? Like calm down, dude.
But we all know Chandler has so much internalized homophobia as well. Oh, little Chandler.
Yes.
I do like have a dream that, you know, in the future, Chandler is actually like kind of like open and bisexual and living his greatest life with like in an open relationship and, you know, whatever. But
I see him as a little like non-binary dumpling, you know, like just like a really like queer, like I'm projecting myself onto him.
He wears a lot of queer clothing, like a lot of clothes that like
he could for sure be a gay woman. You know? And that's sort of how I see him sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
Like, anyway.
I love him. I love Chandler in so many ways. You know, coming back from the episode that we just listened to about him last episode, in which we, like, hate him in so many ways. But this episode, we love him. Yeah, and then I just, like, I put in my notes that these women are wearing, like, some of the dopest outfits ever. Like, she's got, like, this leopard print sweater, and they're wearing, like, these crop tops underneath their sweater, and I'm super into their looks. They both look great, and they've got, like, the short hair, the lipstick. It's very, very late 90s chic.
Yeah, and it's, like, all, like, 90s stuff that is just, like, full circle what is trending right now, you know?
Yeah, like, that's great.
Like, that's exactly what you wear now.
Exactly. Super into it.
It's pretty great.
Yeah, so they get off the bus because they live in the building by the sidewalk. and the women are like, so where's your baby? And they realize that they've pulled the worst thing they could possibly do while taking care of their friend's child, which is to
forget the baby,
forget their child.
Like, that is just so horrifying. And like, to be honest, like, okay, I'll judge them a little because it's not their baby, and that was like their prime, like that was their job, they're babysitting right now. Whereas like, I know, like, I also know that like leaving a baby accidentally somewhere is actually a very common thing, especially for like new parents
who haven't slept very much.
Like, I remember when I was a kid and like for some reason mom and I were at a paint store. And essentially, like, there was a couple at the cash register in front of us, and they had a baby. They placed the baby in, like, the carriage, like, the car seat, like, on the counter to, like, pay for the paint. And, it, like, something along the lines of, like, you know, it's, like, their first home. They're, like, buying paint, you know, to paint the home together, blah, blah, blah. And they leave, drive away, baby's still on the counter.
Yeah.
And it's, like, and mom is there and is, like, and it's just, like, so, like, you know, mom at this point has had all three of us and is just, like, completely non-judgmental and is, like, basically turns to me and is, like, this is a thing that happens. This is real.
That is like, something that I love mom for that. Like, she always is, like, so sympathetic to parents because she's just, like, constantly telling us about, like, all of the things that she, like, could not handle as a parent. And I appreciate that, like, often she'll, like, comfort parents around her about, like, oh, yeah, I remember when, like, I didn't sleep for, like, 4 days because my child had a cough. Like, don't worry. I know. It sounds like definitely, like, you got to be sympathetic for parents out there who are just trying to make things work. But in this case, Chandler and Joey are not, you know, as much as we wish that they were, they are not new parents. And they, you know, had one job.
And they forgot. Yeah, it's like, this is your job. At this point, it's like you're not parents. Like, this is like your own doing because you're being distracted by trying to use the baby to have sex and then forgetting about the baby, you know? Also, I want to say that Anna wrote in, one of our patrons, and from what I understand, Anna does have a baby or a child of some young age, and basically was like was like leaving a baby on a bus. I can see that happening. So validated by yet another parent.
Yay. Yeah, no. Oh, my God. So, yes. Okay. I see it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so then, okay, but let's just, like, let's, because that's, we got lots to unpack when it comes to him, not unpack, but, like, lots to still hear about when it comes to the baby on the bus. But then, okay, yeah, so then we go back to the hospital. Monica's hand is broken. And
yeah, it's like, what I wrote in my notes is, Ross's okay, Monica not so much.
Right. Yeah.
But I don't think it's actually broken.
Oh, yeah, it's bone anyway. Bruised or whatever. Yeah.
Sure. I don't actually think you can see in...
Yeah, I was going to say that. I was like, can you see a bruising in an x-ray? I don't know. But anyways, okay, so then now Stephanie Schiffer shows up in front of Central Perk, and she is there to do her job. And Phoebe does not want her to do her job and questions her ability to play music by asking if she knows two chords and if she knows how to go from one chord to the other chord. And little note about Stephanie Schiffer. So Stephanie Schiffer is played by singer-songwriter Chrissy Hynde, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, who is the lead singer of the band The Pretenders, who were a huge band in the 80s, I guess as well as into the 90s. And they sing, if you don't know, that song that everyone knows.
Which is?
The one that goes... oh, of course, now I can't sing it.
Oh my God, please.
I'll stand by you. Don't want nobody hurt you. I'll stand by. You know that song? Do you know that song?
No.
You definitely know that song.
I mean, I definitely know it, but I definitely don't know it from you singing it. Won't let nobody hurt
you. Okay, fine, whatever. Maybe we'll insert a little sound clip of the song.
I don't think we're allowed legally. I don't know about that.
We'll do it very, very
quickly. Are we?
And we'll do it for one
second. I think it's like if we're critiquing the song, we're maybe allowed to.
Well, so I'm critiquing it by saying it's a great song. There you go. That's my critique.
excellent critique. Well done.
Yeah, okay, so then we're back with watching Chandler and Joey figuring out what the heck is going on. They are in a phone booth. Quinn, do you remember phone booths?
I do. Do you remember that movie where someone answers the phone in the phone booth and then it's like some shooter?
Mm. You mean the movie and Phone that was like Booth?
That one.
Classic. You know what movie also came out eventually? The movie Cellular. Which is a very similar scenario.
Similar concept. Oh my God. Classic. I wonder if they're like, how can we recycle this concept but make it more up to date?
Yeah. Oh my God. So good. I was thinking about both movies the other day.
I really like, actually.
Same. I love that kind of genre of movie where like they're in this scenario and they're like stuck in one place and they have to figure out how to make things work when they're like in this very specific situation. Like I really like the movie Red Eye for that reason, you know. And it's my favorite kind of like action style movie. It's like one person trying to figure out like in an unpredicted predicament. Anyways, yeah. So phone booths are a thing. and Chandler and Joey are obviously trying to locate Ben, who is missing. They left a baby carriage on the bus, and there's a baby in it.
There's a baby in it. Please tell us where to go to find both.
I think that like this acting is so good when we start to see like Chandler and Joey starting to break down, and we see it more later when they're in like the city services area, but like they're just like trying to like get a grip on the situation and clearly unable to do so and just like falling apart.
Those two have good chemistry together.
I know.
Yeah.
I know they do, Quinn. I know they have good chemistry together.
Right, you shipped them. Of course they have good chemistry. So now we're at
at Central Perk. Stephanie Schiffer is singing. So warm welcome.
Rachel is just a lovely friend in this scene.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so after that. Yeah, for sure.
You know, so Rachel walks out and sits with Phoebe on the curb, who has finished, you know, doing her street performance and is feeling kind of bummed, counting her money. Mm-hmm. And feels like capitalism has ruined, well, she doesn't say it like this, but the money has ruined it for her.
Yeah, we've all been there. Like, Quinn, remember that time where we were really, really, really stoked to start a podcast? And then we were like, oh, shit, this takes a lot of time and energy. Maybe we should try to get paid for the work that we're doing for this podcast. And then we were like, but if we get money, then are we going to enjoy it as much? And then we don't know. And then we were lost and confused. And now we're on season two and doing it every second week. And it's a great podcast and you should listen to it.
I feel like you're trying to like cover up at the end or something. To clarify, we do enjoy doing this.
No, 100%.
And the capitalism... yeah, and the capitalism issue is more that our and okay, so this is something that we were talking about recently, right? Like, there, I feel like there's more and more conversations happening about how like millennials have to turn all of their hobbies into like profitable things.
Yeah,
we which don't is have actually time. Yeah, because like it's which is actually like not a healthy thing necessarily. Like to be able to do things that don't actually like give us money is like. Is like a healthy thing to like just have interests that you pursue without any other external pressures. But we live in a world where like in this economy, where it's just sort of like it's the gig economy. And so what we are doing is like the concept of a stable long-term job with benefits that allow us not to actually have to stress about, you know, income doesn't really exist for a lot of people anymore, like more so than ever before, but also recognizing that now that's also in a thing, like that thing, that's a thing that never really existed for lower class folks. But now that the middle class is also experiencing this, it becomes like a quote unquote real problem. But essentially, like now we're in a state where it's like people just don't have hobbies because our real jobs don't pay us enough. And we are not making a stable enough income. Also, on top of that, housing is ridiculously expensive. So, like, outside of the jobs that we have, we're paying exorbitant amounts of rent in order to – and trying to, like, make money to meet that rent when we're living in a gig economy is just, like, all ass backwards, you know? Anyway, this was your thing, Emily, but apparently I ranted about it. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's basically all I wanted to say about it. Yeah, I think that, like – and yeah, I think it's a lot harder to just exist in this kind of gig economy world. And it has made us have to like look at every single way, every single minute of our day and see how we can, you know, profit off of that minute. And like, you know, one of the things that like when we were starting this podcast, like, you know, a lot of what I was reading was like, your podcast is not actually the end result. Your podcast is a way to market the other things that you are doing in your life. And I was like, I just kind of want to talk about friends. Like, I just want to like talk about friends with like my sibling and just like, you know, that's about it. Like, and so
I remember us having conversations where we're like, how does this relate to what we do?
Oh my god, we still have that conversation like daily. We're like, how can we make a podcast about friends somehow relate to the fact that you're a massage therapist and I'm a yoga teacher? How do we do that?
It's just like, and then we're like, well, if we both become psychologists, then this makes more sense. Maybe we should go both become psychologists.
Oh my god, rough.
You know. Which I think is just a sign of us being like, no, we want to continue doing this.
Yeah. Which like is honestly why we did end up doing our season two, right? Is like the idea that we were like, okay, well, it doesn't matter if we make money off of it. This is something we want to do because it's like fun and enjoyable and like we care about this. So it's like, you know, we're just not making money off of it and that's okay. And like that's like basically sing songs even if you don't sing well. You know, play a guitar even if you're shit at playing guitar, you know?
Make a podcast even if you're shitty at podcasting.
Whoa. We're not shitty at podcasting. We're shitty at monetizing our podcast. Classic.
Or maybe
that being said, subscribe to our Patreon if you haven't already.
I hope we're making sense to everyone, folks. Yeah.
But no, it's that hustle management. Culture. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so then just a little side note. So Phoebe says that she and Quinn, don't give any spoilers. for what I'm about to say. Phoebe says that, like, she didn't make any money, and she made less money off of Smelly Cat than she did Susu Suicide. And Smelly Cat, she only got 25 cents and a condom from. And then someone runs down the street and asks if he dropped his condom into her guitar case.
If you have never seen Friends before...
Yeah.
Pay attention to this person.
Yeah. And so without giving away any spoilers, yeah, just, you know, keep this face in the back of your mind.
And so, okay. But then also, so like, this is actually a big episode for like firsts in a sense, you know, between that character kind of showing up and then also, you know, at the end of the episode, well, you know, like, we have them actually singing Smelly Cat.
For the first time?
And, like, mm-hmm. for the first time. And I guess, so, like, when, again, always coming back to how, like, Emily and I didn't actually watch the show as it came out. We would sort of, like, see little reruns here and there. And it wasn't until, like, the show, like, a couple years after the show actually finished that we fell in love with it and binged it intensely. Mm-hmm. And this is back when Netflix didn't exist and only DVDs did.
Oh, good times.
And then when we got to the end of certain seasons and we didn't have the DVD set for the next season, it was a big cliffhanger, we would run upstairs and start reading the script for the next episode because we needed to know how it went.
Did we do that? I just remember that, like, we would text Mom and be like, Mom, can you check Walmart and see if Friends season 6 is in Walmart? And it was, because at the time, all of the seasons were available literally everywhere, so... I don't know if they are as much anymore, but yeah. Because no one watches DVDs anymore.
Yeah, that's true. No one has a DVD player. Mm-hmm. It's funny because, like, as it came out, we didn't really know which episode came before the other or whatnot, like, before we actually watched all of them in a row. And, like, I don't think I ever really fully realized, like, this is the first episode of Smelly Cat. Mm-hmm. This is it, guys. This is Smelly Cat's entrance into the world.
Yeah, it's great. So it's also think of that, because that'll come back as well. Smelly Cat is a great song, and we will hear it again sometime. So we kind of skipped a scene, just going back to when they're in the city office, though. Chandler and Joey are in, I guess, like, whatever, human services, I guess they say. And they have, again, this moment where the actor there is like, I'm assuming one of you is the father, which also, like, is there a way to prove that this is your baby? Like, what do you do in a scenario where someone leaves a baby on the bus? How do you know that that's weird. Actually, it's just an awkward situation. And then they both are like, we're both the father. And then we get this excellent moment where they put their arms around each other and we're just like, you know, we get a view into a world that could have been the one that could have been. So then we get tossed into probably what I would argue one of the best scenes of Friends ever.
Or just like one of the best Joey Chandler
classic Joey Chandler shenanigan moment.
I want to point out the fact that they're like, oh yes, go ahead into the room there where there are like two babies. Go in there unsupervised. Take whichever.
take a baby.
Like, it's so weird. Why are they alone with the babies? Why is there no one else with the babies? Like, it's just...
Yeah, and why was...
Also, why is there another baby?
That was my question. Why? Whose baby is that? Did someone else leave their baby on a bus? Like, is this a common thing that happens? People leaving babies on buses? What? So then we get this, like... I just wrote that they start to, like, descend into this, like, chaotic realm of, like... They're both panicking and spiraling and, like, taking the other one down with them. And I just think it's done so well. And they're like, okay, you know, we're gonna flip for it. He's like, we're gonna flip for the baby. And then he's like, do you have a better idea? And then, like, they do this moment where they flip the coin, and then Joey's stoked that he got heads. And then Chandler has this moment where he's like, we didn't assign anything to which baby. So they basically, it's just...
we'll give heads to ducks, because ducks... have heads.
You know, the tails were right there, Joey. Clowns do not have tails. But yeah, anyways, so yeah, I think that that is easily one of my favorite scenes in the world. Like, if we could play a sound clip into this episode, maybe we'll put one in, but you know, we'll see. but yeah, no. So yeah, and so then they, I guess, end up picking a baby because they end up later on with back at Monica and Rachel's apartment, which again, they're always at Monica's Rachel's apartment with Ben and never actually at Ross's apartment with Ben.
And yeah, it's all very strange.
Yeah. And basically Ben comes home. Well, first we get this cute little moment, I guess, of Monica and Ross sitting on the couch and talking about all these childhood memories of them kind of like beating each other up.
Yeah, it's such a great moment.
Yeah, it's very cute. And, you know,
I think it's just, yeah, it's cute that they can look back at it in like a way that they're like fond of these memories. And then Ross is like, you know, I hope Ben has a little sister.
Mm-hmm. Listen closely. So cute. Write that in your little like diary of things to reflect on later.
This is a big episode.
It is a big episode.
Like a foreshadowing episode, you know?
And then, okay, and then they bring home the baby. At first, it doesn't cry in Monica's arms, and they're like, oh shit, we flipped and we took the wrong baby. Which also, they had a 50-50 chance of getting this right. Like, oh, this could have been a way worse way to end an episode if they had gotten this thing wrong. And then, yeah, they pick up the baby, which, by the way, the two babies looked very similar. So I do understand how they could have gotten this wrong. But, like, I do feel like it's kind of weird that you don't know what a baby looks like. But we'll see.
Babies are very particular. But it's also interesting because they probably – because normally kids, like babies are twins, right, that like go on to the show. And
was it like two because twins? Do you know?
And I don't know, but I kind of wonder if, because normally what they do is they hire twins because there's a bunch of laws around how much a baby can be exposed to like the lighting and stuff like that. And so they get twins so they can just like shoot more consistently and just swap them out and still stay within the guidelines. And so I wonder if that was just a scene where they're like, let's just throw both twins in for this scene to like make it believable that they can't decipher the two of them.
Right. Interesting. I can't find anything about whether or not the babies were actually like the same baby. Yeah. No, I can't. I don't know. Who knows? But okay. Yes. Going back, where are my notes? So then the baby comes in. He goes to change the baby's diaper.
And oh, okay, wait. It's Cole and Dylan Sprouse that played. They were twins.
No. Those, okay. That's who plays the adult kids. The adult Ben. I mean, not adult. Oh, okay. Like more.
I thought it was
older Ben.
Okay. We should look into that more. But I thought that it was the same character that actually played for a pretty long time. But anyway, okay, let's move past this. Sorry, folks. We're like...
Okay. Well, yeah. Anyways, we'll edit all this out. All this gibberish.
Or no, we could just leave it in. Hey, guys, this is what's happening behind the scenes.
Classic.
Now front of scenes.
That time where we like Google shit while recording. Yeah. So anyway, so they go to change his diaper, and obviously it says property of human services on little baby Ben's bum.
They like... almost got away with it.
And I also want to know, like, are these, like, diapers just stamped with property of human services? Does human services just, like, have diapers that have the property of human services stamp on them? Like, do they get them custom-made? Did they stamp his bum?
I can imagine that it's possible, like, if this is a social services thing, it's probably reusable diapers, you know?
I don't know. And pretty disposable.
Does it? I don't know then. It's like, are they stamping it before they put it on the baby, or are they stamping it when it's on
that's
the
what
baby
I want to know.
To stamp the baby?
Yeah. And like, how often does this happen again? Like, does this happen often?
Well, I could imagine it's just social services for like,
right. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. But yeah, anyway. It just all of this doesn't make very much sense. But
it's all very amusing, is what it is.
Exactly. And then obviously Ross goes to beat up his two friends who very, very deserve it for not taking care of his child very well. And they threaten to like poison him with more key lime, pie, which is
I've got pie. Run, run, Joey, run.
So great.
So good.
Yeah. And okay. And that's the episode.
I think that's everything. Emily, okay, I think it's like non-disputable who the best friend is. I mean, a little disputable, but I know who I very strongly
would say. I'd say Rachel.
Yeah, same. Yeah. I'm totally 100% Rachel there standing up for her, you know, the people she loves and doing being badass about it.
Yeah, I think Monica's like a pretty dope friend too in this episode. Like taking Ross and, you know, doing what she needs to do and being a good sibling. I think I like that this episode kind of like you see three variations of like close friendships. Like you see Rachel and Phoebe taking this like moment of friendship together, and then Joey and Chandler having a panic friendship, and then, you know, this sibling friendship between Ross and Monica, I think is very cute. But
yeah. It's a good episode for ships.
Maybe one of the poll questions we could put this week is also who do you think is the best friend of this episode and why? And also, oh my God, I have another poll question that I want us to put in is, would you have picked the baby that had the ducks or would you have picked the baby that has the clowns?
Yeah, that's a good one.
All right. So I guess that's it for this week. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Emily. You can find me on Instagram, EmilyBYoga, or on my website, EmilyBYoga.com. I'm not really putting anything on Instagram right now, but like, you know, sometimes I share stories. You can also like send me an email, but probably send an email to WhatTheFlangey, which is WhatTheFlangey@gmail.com.
Wait, no. It's WTFlangey@gmail.com.
You are correct. It is WTFlangey@gmail.com. Send us an email. We would love to hear from you. And you can also find us on Instagram. Where can they find us on Instagram, Quinn? I always forget what our handle is.
It's WT Phalange Podcast.
Okay, great. Yeah, so do that.
And yeah, so follow us there because we are going to get some polls up and we also post some great little things. We keep everyone up to date with new episodes coming out. And we are also launching our website, which is either going to be up today if Quinn gets their shit together.
I feel like we've been saying that for like a month now. There will be a website one day.
Anywho. However, you can also find me, Quinn, at the handle MindBodyWithQuinn on Instagram or the basic NB. But also just head over to www.quinnkbrune.com and you can find me wherever I am on there. Also, apparently I have Twitter.
Interesting. So. We have Twitter too, but we don't post anything on our Twitter.
Yeah, for the podcast.
Yeah, I only made our Twitter account so that I could tweet at Buffering the Vampire Slayer, which is a great podcast.
Yeah, also a great podcast. That's really funny.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. And keep deconstructing
and diversifying
the media you consume.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of What the Phalange. If you're picking up what we're putting down, please consider supporting us on Patreon, leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, and or sharing us with all of your friends on social media.
You can find us at whatthephalangepodcast.com. Email us at WTPhalange@gmail.com, DM us on Twitter at WTPhalangePod, or follow us on Instagram at WTPhalangePodcast. All links will be included in the show notes below.
Want to get in touch with us each individually? You can find Emily on Twitter as EmilyB__, and that's Emily with an IE.
And you can find Quinn at TheBasicNB on Instagram. Keep deconstructing
and diversifying
the media you consume.